Everybody, welcome to the November-December live edition of Sequel Unplugged. Welcome to the show. I'd like to welcome my hosts as usual, Sean and Rohan. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is your opportunity to ask Sean and Rohan anything. So in the browser, ask any questions you like. We'll see if we can answer those. But before we get to your questions, a couple topics that we wanted to get to. This is our first show since we did this live at Sequel Pass. And there was a lot of excitement generated around all the announcements from PASS, right? What were those? And let's overview those for a second. What were those?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the the biggest thing was I think the launch of SQL 16 as a part of the day one keynote. I think that sort of, I think the response to the social media. I think it's one of these things where we're looking back and there was probably very few of any sort of negative sentiment around the release. There was generally a lot of positive vibes, just given the amount of value that's coming in as a part of the release. You know, I think it's sort of, especially if you compare with the last couple of releases we've done in SQL Server, SQL 16 clearly stands out as the biggest release we've done.
Yeah, this was, the announcement was CTP3, correct?
Yeah.
The available CTP3.
Correct. Right? The announcement was CTP3, and you know, like, obviously I think, you know, sort of Sean covered the, as a part of the day one keynote, covered the hero scenarios you went through. I mean, there's big ones, if you know, think about like, you know, what's coming with Always Encrypted, what's coming with Stretch Database.
Yeah.
You know, operational analytics is huge, you know, especially when it comes to sort of real-time applications. You know, the list sort of goes on and on. In fact, one of the things we were joking about behind the stage was, you know, we only covered the hero scenarios and it sort of almost took over the keynote. And if you sort of go through all the features that are there in the release, it would probably take a day to go through that.
Yeah.
Right. So,
what was the overall excitement? How did the audience receive and take these announcements from things like StretchDB, Polybase, R? You know, what was the overall sentiment and feeling from those announcements?
Yeah, it was really positive. I think the day of the keynote, there's a number of new things we were talking about in there, R being built directly into SQL was probably the thing that caught a lot of attention. There were a lot of folks that, particularly data developers that know T-SQL, they might be vaguely familiar with R, but you know, this whole notion of how do I build intelligence into my app?
Yep.
I can do that with R. The fact that you can embed R directly into T-SQL scripts, that people loved it. And I got stopped by quite a few folks. There's a lot of sentiment out there around people fully embracing that. I think they see the opportunity.
And it's a good question, which is a good segue into our next topic. Why do you see people, why is this a big deal for people? I mean, you know, we're talking about relational, but now we're talking about R and Polybase. Why are people getting excited about these specific topics?
Yeah, you know,
not that it's bad.
I think of it like this, you know, so, you know, clearly we're all working in this era of data right now. And the interesting thing is there's transformations happening in every industry segment. So if you look at, you know, there's a school district here in Washington. It's in a low income area. They traditionally have had, unfortunately, they've had a high dropout rate. So not as many kids are actually graduating. But the school district is embracing data so that you can start to predict and see in advance when kids are having trouble in school so they can take a proactive action there. And, you know, just the school district embracing data, they've actually increased their graduation rate by a significant amount. And the interesting thing is not that they're teaching differently, it's that they're using data to guide choices that they're making. Or, you know, Rohan and I were in Asia, you know, a couple weeks ago, and you know, you're sitting here talking to a customer about building intelligent tires. You know, imagine tires with sensors emitting telemetry and then running some sort of machine learning sort of at a truck level so that you get a level of intelligence that a fleet manager with a device, you know, could literally manage thousands and thousands of trucks based on ML. And really sort of what's behind it is that this notion of building intelligent apps is what has people's attention in a big way, because they know there's data, you know, but the question is, you know, hey, how do I build some level of intelligence to help me make sense of that data? And that dominates pretty much every conversation that we have with customers.
Well,
today.
That's a good question. We talk about intelligent applications, one of the big topics, you know, one of the big kind of keywords now. Is it the data that's driving the intelligent application? Because when we say intelligent application, we're like, okay, I'm gonna create this great app. But is the, you know, now we're talking about taking the data to the application, to the source. Is this where the data and these great features like R and Polybase and Operations Analytics, which is really driving these intelligent applications?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. You know, if you basically like even follow the ML research that sort of happened in the academia, you know, one of the things is there's all these intelligent algorithms and all that have been created even like 10, 15 years back. But the reason that, you know, the true potential wasn't being reached is because you didn't really have, you know, the high volume of data that guides even creating the model.
Yeah.
You know, and then you operationalize it, right? So, you know, what's happening with this, you know, I think just in terms of you think about what cloud's sort of doing is, given that now you have these, you know, like big, you know, cloud providers, Azure being one of them, where you sort of, you know, collect a lot of this data which can drive the intelligence back into the algorithms.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's, in some sense, that's the fuel for the engine.
Yep.
So the engine was there, but it had no fuel. And data is sort of providing the fuel sort of to create the intelligence apps. And for R specifically, I mean, we have customers who actually have built these solutions by pulling the data out of SQL Server, running, you know, all this, you know, R scripts, if you will, in a standalone fashion and creating different data management systems. And what we're doing with SQL Server 2016 just makes it really, really simple. If you're a developer, just sort of pull a model, put it in, and even the manageability, you know, so that obviously having it embedded sort of really impacts your perf and scale. It's a lot better, it's going to be a lot better. And even just the manageability story, and I'm not pulling the data out and doing something else with it.
Yeah, in fact, if you think about it, this is probably one of the more important topics is that if you're a DBA, and let's say, for example, you're trying to build an intelligent app, and you want to do some type of statistics on it. In the past, I would have had an operational system. I'd pull that data out, as Rohan was describing. I'd run it in some statistical system, compute that data, bring the result back. You know, in the new world order, you'd say, well, why do I have to have two systems? Why can't it be one? And right. If I could take the R runtime and embed it right with SQL, then I could do that statistical computation right over the data in the system.
Yep.
So as DBA, it's great because now I think of performance, scale, security, in one way with one system. From a developer's point of view, it's interesting, as you were just pointing out, the R and all these algorithms have been around for a long time, and boy, wouldn't it be great if I was looking to do some sort of anomaly detection, if I could go grab a well-known algorithm, embed it into my T-SQL, compute over that data, and then I build a more sophisticated app. But I will tell you this, I think the one thing that is critical here is if you think about it, statistics and intelligence is not something that's like invented today. To Rohan's point, the amount of data that you have is the fuel to power the engine. But one of the things we're really trying to do is democratize this. And like, shouldn't every business be able to build an intelligent app?
Yep.
Like, is it building an intelligent app exclusive to just a few industry segments? We don't think that's true. We actually think everybody who needs to build an intelligent app, from a school district to a hospital to a manufacturer, they should all gain access to it. So the cool thing is with SQL, we're not trying to create these models where if you want intelligence, you have to pay a fortune for the data model or a fortune for the algorithm. This kind of shows the power of bringing open source into a platform like ours and how you can sort of drive the economics down.
But does it make it, I'm going to just throw this out there, is there a whole new, we're basically saying we're gonna bring these analytical models into the relational database. Is there a whole new skill set that I have to learn as if I'm a DBA or a SQL, is there a whole new skill set? Because, oh, crap, now do I have to learn R, right?
Yeah,
or how do we now think about this, you know, from a developer perspective? Because great, I can build an intelligent application. But how does my skill set change from this perspective?
Yeah, you know, here's the funny thing. In the spirit of Unplugged, when we were rehearsing the keynote, which Rohan and I, you know, had the opportunity to sort of represent the team's work, the whole set of demos was around building intelligent apps.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny that, you know, we had been talking about this before the keynote. It's like, you know, if you take Rohan as the, you know, a typical DBA data dev,
yeah,
this guy is not only doing typical T-SQL, all of a sudden he's now bringing R
correct
into these scripts. And even amongst ourselves, we're like, you know, this is, I'm going to be really upfront with us and the crowd. We're like, gosh, this is,
that's why
this
we have
is
this
not
show
subtle. Like, yeah, this, yeah, is, why, yeah, this is not subtle. This is really signaling strong that the world forward is probably gonna mean you get to a great opportunity to evolve your skill set,
yeah,
in a big way.
In it, yeah, exactly.
In a good way too. I mean, let's get this
absolutely
where things are going, right? So in a good way.
So you know, it is interesting where if you essentially think about it, it is actually pretty interesting. Like we're going through the motions of preparing for it. It's like and more, you know, when you start talking about intelligent apps and what the DBAs need to do, there's an aspect of like getting, you know, just sort of the data science part of it, which sort of will become over a period of time a more, you know, important part of the job. So it's not just about managing the data, but what value is coming out of the data, you know, becomes a pretty critical part of. And even from a developer standpoint, just, you know, since you asked, like if you're a T-SQL developer, we sort of, one of the big things is a lot of these are, you know, scripts that sort of create these models, like Sean was saying, you don't have to invent it. All this stuff exists in open source.
Yep.
And our, you know, going in, the thing that we wanted to do was make sure that it was very easy to just sort of, you read about a particular algorithm if you need that for, you know, anomaly detection, whatever. Just take that and embed it into your script at the right point. That's all you need to do.
So and let me jump out and take a question here because people are starting to ask questions. But one of the questions that was asked after our last show at PASS was, and the kind of the reason we brought this up here was, is it things like this? Because you know, that are putting Microsoft in the, we're bragging a little bit here, you know, where the whole magic quadrant, you know, that puts us kind of in the leader there. Is it things like this where we say, hey, our vision and the ability to execute and implement these kind of technologies, is that what's allowing this?
Well, I think Satya puts it best for Microsoft as a whole. And, you know, when you hear Satya say things like the industry doesn't respect tradition, it respects innovation. I think what you see, you know, this is all about, you know, our continued drive for, you know, good innovation. R being built into the platform and is an example of that. Being able to stretch a database from on-prem into Azure in a very meaningful way is a super solid innovation. Yep. The way we engineer, you know, our cloud-first strategy sort of sets us up to build software faster than we ever had before because the learning, you know, we learn every single day. In fact, when you read this Gartner report, you'll see one of the things that caught their attention is that our cloud-first strategy is something that they were really interested in because it's not like the old day when we'd sit around and go, hey, you know, what do you think the world's going to look like 2 years from now? Well, I'm not sure a lot of people actually know. But if you can learn really, really fast and address gaps fast, then you're set up to innovate faster and solve problems quicker. That's a lot of that is what accrues to sort of, you know, this good standing in the quadrant.
Okay, so over the last 30 days, we had, you know, great excitement to PASS. What have you heard over since then, over the last 30 days, based on, you know, all this excitement? Are people reaching out and they're like, ooh, or is there going, hey, you know, can you make these changes? What do you really hear?
Yeah, I mean, just sort of share you, like, some of the, I mean, this has sort of been the case ever since we sort of, you know, this whole cloud-first execution model, the fact that we're doing monthly releases, the engagement that we have with the community, especially through our TAP programs and all, has been, like, almost unprecedented in terms of, not just in terms of the number of people who are downloading the CTP, you know, that's a metric, but it's really what we look at is the quality of the feedback that's coming in terms of how people are using it and giving, you know, like, the feedback. It's interesting, actually, one of the issues that we discovered recently in the spirit of Unplugged, we sort of were discussing this in the ship room, was, like, you know, one sort of a major issue that has been in the product for close to 11 years. So I'm sure some customers hit it at some point in time. We never, like, in all the stress runs that we do, we never hit it, but it got caught on the cloud, right? And so this is sort of an example of, like, how the strategy is differentiated because you're running at the scale, which there is just no way, if you didn't have a cloud footprint like we do, there's just no way you catch these issues. And so we have some of our, you know, longtime engineers looked at that and says, man, I can't believe we got that bug checked.
If you think about it, SQL 16 powers the entire Azure relational platform today. Yeah. So that's 24 regions around the world. You're talking hundreds of billions of requests a day, failovers that happen all the time. So the stress on the system is big. But a lot of people, I think, had no idea that SQL Server SQL Server 16 powers a cloud. And I think when people heard that, they're like, man, I had no idea. And, you know, the same HA stack that's powering Azure is coming down to SQL 16. But I would, you know, the things that that I think we saw, some of it a surprise, some of it not a surprise. The, I guess, the moreover, the energy around Always Encrypted was incredibly high. The energy around advanced analytics with R incredibly high, operational analytics. I think people are thinking of our in-memory platform in a very different way. Mobile BI was also a headliner, like the, you know, the reformed reporting services, the new mobile BI scenarios, et cetera, is big. So I think people, you know, I have to say this pass was probably the latest read. I actually got 1,600 emails in the course of 2 days after pass. And it's people that are just excited. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, from proof of concepts to, hey, this intelligent app, this is actually really interesting to... I mean, it just goes on and on, so it's good.
It might be worth dedicating our next show in January to this whole concept around intelligent applications, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, spend more time on that. Yeah. But let's get to a couple questions. Someone was asking, speaking of the quadrant, they're like, you know what, Gardner is saying from our HADR scenario is too expensive, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, well, how can we fix that? How do we address that?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a few things that we've done is so the standard edition of SQL is going to have the easiest way to think about it is a two node always on or very, you know, a basic HA story. So if you need a two node always on basic HA story, that's going to be in the standard edition, which makes the economics of that, you know, solid.
Yep.
And then, of course, if you need the additional power of, you know, readable secondaries and, you know, your grow-up story is actually really solid. So we've addressed that. And then the other thing that we've done is we've addressed some of the BYOL licensing, so you have a consistent HA licensing model between on-prem and in the cloud. So we've done it since that report was put together. We've actually done... a lot of work to sort of make it affordable for different scenarios, mm-hmm. and then of course consistent between the cloud and on-prem.
Okay, one more question. So they're saying, I see ClearDB has come with geo-distributed MySQL databases. Is there a roadmap for SQL database for this?
ClearDB has come with geo-distributed. So we have geo-distributed databases today. So you can. What you can do in SQL today is, you know, you can create a primary database in any region. Like with our premium offer, you can use active geo-replication.
Yeah, is that the geo-replication scenario, right?
Correct.
To multiple readable secondaries.
Yep.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, so you can, and, you know, the nice thing there is, you know, a lot of customers ask questions like, hey, is there, like, you know, a physical boundary, like, in how far you can... have a secondary. We show a demo where, and you can do this now, you can go in the portal, create a database anywhere in the US. You can create a readable secondary in Europe, all the way in Japan, down in Australia. So you can geo-distribute a SQL database
however far you want.
Around the world in about five minutes or so.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to a couple topics that we talked about prior to the show, some announcements, a few things that are in preview. Global transactions, global query, and jobs.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's, so this whole notion of, you know, you keep getting into, like, how do you make the life of a person who sort of wants to scale out their application easy? And you know, we sort of are taking a sort of a long-term but a very incremental approach. So it's not like a big bang that comes and solves your entire scale-out story in one step, right?
Yep.
And this is sort of just, you know, having, you know, done this for sort of more than a decade right now, there's a ton of learning that we've had just, you know, experimenting with a whole bunch of innovation that we tried. What you have right now is a preview of, you know, like global query as an example.
So let's back up a second and explain what these are, because maybe our viewers aren't,
correct.
Know what these are.
Yeah, so we can sort of go step by step as an example. So if you think about sort of a scale-out application, which is sort of, you know, you could do vertical partitioning or horizontal scale-out as an example, right, where you have, you know, orders table that you're joining with your customers table in a typical vertical partitioning vertical partitioning scenario, you need to access or you need to issue a query that needs to access two different databases, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've enabled that with the public preview of global query.
Okay.
So you can do that. So that's a vertical partitioning scenario. Or if you basically landed up, you know, horizontally partitioning your data across time zones as an example, like, you know, the last 5 years versus 2 years, et cetera, right? This is, again, a very standard way in which people partition their data. So we have a notion which you can sort of actually create a server-side shard map with a tool that we shipped. It's a client-side library that, again, allows you to make very simple T-SQL queries, you know, that sort of span and give you a union all
across
back.
Across many shards and
give you a union all back. But the cool, like one of the, you know, big new innovations that's coming, you know, that's come out is this notion of a global transaction, which, you know, the idea is, you know, intuitively supporting reads, you could argue, well, you're sort of just querying the data across and sort of doing a union all and returning, but supporting a notion of multiple databases being part of a single transaction is actually a very, very complicated thing to get right. And a key design point for this, what we released in the public preview, was this notion of just extending system.transaction, which exists in ADO.NET today. People use that for doing distributed transactions. Now, that works against Azure DB, right? So you can sort of enlist. And functionally, we've tested up to, like, you know, 100 different databases participating in a single transaction. Of course, you know, the higher the number of databases, it impacts your commit time, because at the back end, we're using a two-phase commit protocol. But yeah, it's something that we're super, super excited about.
That's kind of cool. What about jobs?
Yeah, so jobs is, you know, the final thing that, you know, when you sort of think about, like, just manageability or maintenance across a lot of these different shards that you have, you know, you want to go change the schema of a table that's horizontally partitioned, as an example. How do you do that in a consistent way once you get into hundreds or thousands of shards that you're managing?
You've got to add a column to a table. How do I do that against 100 databases, right?
So what this service allows you to do is, in an eventually consistent way, allows you to sort of create that. Okay. So, I mean, you can imagine with all the failure characteristics of the cloud, you know, doing something as simple as adding or dropping a column is not trivial as the number of databases gets into the thousands.
Yeah, well, if you think about SQL DB, the nice thing, no, take the Elastic Pool thing we've talked about. I have 100 or so or thousands of databases that make up my app. Being able to query across all of those to for a report, for example, to transact against them could be, you know, sort of writing to a collection of these shards. You know, if I decide that, hey, role level security is something that I want to turn on across my entire environment, would I go do that one by one by one, or would I submit that as a job? So the now with global transactions, query, and jobs together in public preview, it's sort of, these are the foundation blocks, if you will, to the elasticity story we're building. Yep.
Okay. All right, let's take another question. So, Amandeep, let's ask you, is that a question we want to tackle right there?
Yeah, so how is Microsoft going to compete with SAP HANA, especially when SAP introduces SAP S4 HANA? And other tools. So, so here's what I would say. I think it's a, I get this question all the
probably
time.
Probably
all day, I would come back to this Gartner report, and if we wanted to have a focus session on SAP, I would love to do that, because this is not a 2 or 3 minute answer. But what I can say is this. You know, the when we commit to building something, we're not, you know, our mental model is not one where we're not trying to take on-premise software and just hoist it up into the cloud and call it cloud ready.
Yeah.
That model doesn't work. And this might explain why other vendors don't have as strong of a cloud story. Because some of them really think, well, hey, I'm going to take this on-prem software, I'm going to host it
sort
in the cloud.
Lift and shift into the whole cloud thing, yeah.
I can tell you, we can share many of war stories. It has taken us years to build a globally distributed, stateful workload in the context of Azure. That's number one. And you know, sort of when you think about what I just said, the design pattern in the cloud is very different than on-prem. To Rohan's point, you're dealing with hardware that fails all the time. The day of just these hugely engineered system, I think those days are numbered. Because the economics of the cloud. The second thing I would say is that this whole cloud first, if you look at our ability to design software, discover problems at any place in our stack, let it be in memory or anywhere else, that's unmatched in the industry. So if you look at our release schedules, we're not on a once a year cadence or every 2 years. You know, we're enhancing our scenarios literally every week, every month.
Yeah.
The third thing that I'd say, if you look at this Gartner report and read it, what SAP HANA customers are saying, one of the things that they're complaining about is that the story is great, but the reality, the software, is something different. And I'll let, I mean, it's in the report. Actually, when I was reading through it, and I got a lot of respect for the SAP engineers and whatnot. But when you read about what customers are saying, hey, great story, great promise, but in practice, you know, it's not as great as it may sound. That doesn't mean it stays that way, but I think those are some of the challenges that SAP customers are having. So the last thing is, we're not trying to force everybody to be in the cloud. We're not trying to force everybody to be on-prem. You know, we're just basically saying that the transformational experience you're trying to build in your own business will dictate what technology you use and where. Yeah. And we have a platform across both cloud and on-prem to satisfy that.
And you sort of you alluded to that earlier when you said, hey, we're learning a lot from this process. Let's talk about one of the topics you want to talk about, the whole SQL Server box telemetry process. We spend a lot of time looking at this telemetry information. How do we make improvements on this system? Talk about that a minute.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, what Sean and I are super, super excited about what our team has done is, you know, all the learnings that we started getting from Azure, you know, from our databases in Azure, you know, the thinking was like, man, if we get like a certain percentage of this telemetry coming from our like hugely installed on-prem customers, wouldn't that be great, right? Because, and it's not just, you know, one of the things about telemetry collection people get very confused is it's not just to make the product better, it's actually to make the customer experience better. I mean, we have things that we are piloting in SQL DB based on the telemetry that we collect from the databases. We are going and giving advice based on like, hey, the query that you're running can be optimized, or, you know, this notion of index advisor, and, you know, the sky is the limit in terms of how you can sort of make, you know, the application itself, how you can like sort of learn a lot of the application based on the query patterns that you're seeing. So the whole, like, the thing that's driving even sort of collecting this from the box is to create a similar environment. Imagine even before the customer calls up customer support because they're running into performance problems after they didn't upgrade, you know, we already had that information. So when they called in, or our support team actually reached out to the customer, the engineers reached out to the customer and said, hey, as you're going through the upgrade, we're noticing you're running into some of these issues way before they even discover it.
Yeah.
We have like very specific examples when we sort of do this for our Azure customers. They're like, wow, like I didn't even know that I was running into a problem. We're doing this with intrusion detection where we sort of, you know, based on the telemetry, we are finding out things like what attacks are happening against your database. I mean, that's becoming one of the big problems, right? So, and again, these are a few examples of the kind of customer value that, you know, they get back. And of course, from our perspective, when we get this telemetry data, it sort of helps us, like when certain things that are happening where the customer queries are not being sort of written the right way, what can we do from our side? Is there something from a tooling standpoint to make it easy? Or where the sort of the warning is in the face, if you will, as I'm typing through, you know, through IntelliSense and T-SQL. Yep. There's just a whole range of things. So this is something that we're super excited about.
It's this tooling that provides the preemptive instead of the reactive,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Which makes the whole platform, you know, it's how can we make this easier to use?
I mean, the telemetry can never be, in the spirit of being upfront, it can never be a one-way street. Yeah. Like, you know, customer is providing telemetry and they're not getting anything in return.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that doesn't even make sense. So the way we really think about it is that whatever data we get, from the smallest to the largest size, we have to make value out of that data.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is how we really talk about it. And if we can't make value and improve our products with that data, then why turn this telemetry pipeline on? I mean, that's what I mean by it being a one-way street. So I'll give you another example of what's coming between now and RTM in the spirit of unplug. But, you know, like, take a scenario of somebody stretching a database.
Yep.
They're in a client tool management studio. They fire up a wizard to sort of help do the, you know, I want to stretch this database from on-prem to the cloud. Part of that wizard will do a policy-based evaluation of all the objects, and the objects that aren't supported, you know, show up that way. Wouldn't that be great if we had telemetry from every single stretch database of the objects that, you know, how many databases had objects that we don't currently support, and what are the top two or three? And when you can get that telemetry in the order of days and weeks, mm-hmm. and then coming back to our cloud-first system, it gives us the opportunity to go just point in time, boom, 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 fix those three things and ship it right back down to the product.
Yeah, the turnaround's much faster.
Correct.
Way, way faster. So the telemetry that we have on SQL 16, I wish we could show it. In fact, we should see if we can. I'd love to show it to you so you can see what we see. But, you know, think of scenarios, or think of like somebody who's doing always encrypted. And, you know, how many customers are picking deterministic over random encryption algorithm? And when you can know these things quickly and then turn around and address things via a monthly release update, that's where the two-way street and cycle begins. So we're pretty excited about it.
I think that'd be very powerful there. So like I said, in the next show, maybe we spend some time not only talking about the intelligent applications, but you know, how do we look at some of this telemetry data?
Yeah, so one funny thing we learned was there was a customer, a very active TAP customer, who downloaded our latest tools and connected to SQL 2000. clearly are not testing with that. No. I mean, you know, stuff like that, you get to know
it. What was the name of them? We'll call them. That's right. No. All right, so let's wrap this up. Tooling, because we mentioned that. What are we...
I can't go into
all the time.
I can't go into specifics. But here's what I can say: there is work going on around modernizing Management Studio right now, and this work is going to emerge somewhere between now and RTM. But I'll tell you what that includes. So that's moving to the latest VS shell.
Yep.
When you move to the latest VS shell, you get some really cool theming support, you know, high res support. It's really, you know, some fun stuff. Other things that the team is looking at is dashboards. So when you have Object Explorer over on the left-hand side, you connect, you know, you have a node. One of the things that you hear a lot about is, hey, it's really hard to find certain things in the toolbox. So they've built some really nice dashboards, if you will, for each node so that, you know, if you're on a database and you're trying to get to always encrypted, it's right there in front of you. If you're trying to increase the performance, in memory is right there in front of you. They have some new search-based technology so you can find things faster. But I know they showed this to a smaller set of folks at PASS and got some really, really good feedback. Yeah. So I'll tell you that's the direction that we're heading.
They showed it at the MVP Summit too, and there's interesting feedback there as well.
Yeah.
But I think the overall excitement, right?
Right.
From a tooling perspective. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. All right, let's take two questions and we got to wrap up. So when will SQL Azure support accessing more than one database at once? I access a database from stored procedures in another one.
So if you're sort of just doing query workloads, you can do that today with Global Query if you're doing just regular T-SQL. But when you think about like supporting transactions, today we support that only as a part of system.transaction, so it's a more of a client-side API. But there's ongoing work to actually support this as a part of regular T-SQL as well.
And I'm trying to get to that question down there. Are there any NoSQL features being added? We can't see the rest of the question. Maybe we can take a second and see if we can see the rest of that question. Golaz, can we see the rest of that question? Or who's in there? Maybe we'll have to wait to that question to the next. Oh, there we go. Are there any new features being added to SQL Server? Polybase. Any others?
Yeah, I mean, JSON support comes to mind from a data type. Polybase comes to mind from this ability to very easily query by using T-SQL, other data sources like Hadoop or Cloudera.
Yeah.
There's more flexibility, I think, in SQL today than before. So when you think of NoSQL products, they're just having a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
When you hear things like, you know, in the past you had to really intentionally choose, am I sort of building an app for rows or columns?
Yeah.
You know, we bring those two things together with operational analytics and SQL 16. So that sort of removes this rigid aspect of making a choice up front on the type of workload. Yeah. So there's a lot, and I would say I wish we could start talking about some of the things we're incubating to remove even further friction. We'll save that for a different day, but I think we've got some good groundwork here.
I think the thing is download CTP3 and start playing with JSON and Polybase things. Right.
And exactly, and give feedback in terms of what is it that you'd like to see. Frankly, I think it's
And on that last question, is there any plans to upgrade Management Studio to the Visual Studio? Yes.
That's what I was just talking about.
Yeah. We're going to move to the latest VS shell, and we'll definitely come back and take a closer sort of tools when we're ready for it.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, I think we are definitely out of time. Thanks for coming. And so let's plan in January, come back and start looking at telemetry and some of the intelligent applications things.
Sounds good.
Right. Sounds good.
All right, everybody. So if you have questions and we didn't get to them, email them to SQLUnplugged@outlook.com or to Twitter handle @SQLUnplugged. We'll get to them next time. But thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.